I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for Wisdom Watch, the time where we visit with distinguished elders who can share some wisdom with us about today's pressing issues. Today, we have a voice from the media, the Spanish-language media. El Diario La Prensa was founded in 1913. 95 years later, at a time in which other newspapers are announcing major budget and staff cuts, the paper is thriving. Almost 350,000 readers turn to its pages every day. Rosana Rosado has truly risen through the ranks at the paper. She joined the staff as a layout artist and a reporter in 1983 and eventually became the first woman editor-in-chief. Today, she's serving as the paper's first woman publisher and CEO, and she was kind enough to join us now. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having us, but I think there's been a mistake because I am not an elder.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Certainly not. A senior diva.
Okay.
Senior diva.
I can live with that one.
Okay. The Senior Diva Watch. You grew up in New York in the Bronx. Why did you want to be a journalist?
I wanted to be a writer. And I loved writing. I loved reading. It was kind of my passion even growing up. And so when I went to college, I was going to be an English major because I really wanted to write. I felt I could be a teacher and write. I wanted to write books. And it was kind of in the middle of my first semester of college when the head of the English department called me in and said, you know, why are you majoring in English? And I said, because I want to teach English. And she was like, well, I don't think you can teach English because you speak with an accent. And I started laughing because my Spanish was not that good. So I didn't think I had an accent. I said, maybe I have a Bronx accent. And she laughed. And I said, you know, I really want to write. And she said, well, you know, maybe you should do journalism. And I was like, okay. And, you know, that was kind of the best bad advice I ever got.
As you mentioned, that English was your
first language.
So how did you start writing for a Spanish language paper?
Because, you know, language always dogged me as an issue. I took Spanish as a second major in college. And, you know, when I graduated from college, I really wanted a writing job. And my first job was in radio, actually. I was a desk assistant at CBS Radio AM here in New York. And I figured out in the first few months that very few people moved from being desk assistants to writers. In fact, whenever they were going to hire a writer, they went out of the station. And then I noticed that all the desk assistants were Black and Hispanic. And I was like, okay, I'm out of here. I want to write.
What kind of stories did you do when you first started writing?
Well, you know, when I went to El Diario, they hired me as a writer. And then the trick was, you know, doing it in Spanish, which was also a challenge because, again, growing up in New York, I had never lived in Puerto Rico where my parents were from. So I felt fully bilingual, but it's very different to do journalism in a language that's not your kind of native language. And the newsroom was filled with, you know, very mean people.
And they
were so mean to me. I was the youngest. I was the only girl. And it was a rough and tumble environment. And they were like, you don't even speak Spanish. But I kind of won them over because I had a car and I knew the city, right? And so newsrooms in Spanish language newspapers at that time, and we're 95 years old today, so it's not like these papers just sprung up. But newspapers in Spanish language hired people who were Spanish language writers who came from other countries, and they didn't know the city like I did. I covered the Bronx, which was a natural, right? I covered the Bronx. I covered East Harlem. And eventually I became a City Hall reporter. I covered City Hall.
Do you think that you were hazed because you were a girl or because you were that Spanish wasn't your first language?
Both. Mm-hmm. Because I was a girl and because I was a Puerto Rican of this different tribe, I was a mainland, you know, Puerto Rican. I wasn't even a real Puerto Rican, right? And so these were the days when in those newsrooms, I think it's much different today, but in those days, newsrooms were very politicized, were very divided along political lines, right? There were Cubans on the right, Cubans on the left. There were Puerto Ricans on both sides of the spectrum. And, you know, the thing about it, I was so young that I loved it.
Really? I was going to ask you, why do you think you stuck it out? A lot of people would say, the heck with
this. I loved it. And, you know, I joke around with people. Sometimes I tell them, you know, I was too young to know, what sexual harassment was. And so I let them call me sweetheart. And, you know, I learned to drink. I learned to drink beer. I learned to curse. And I became kind of one of the guys. And in exchange, they taught me the ropes.
When you were a reporter, I understand you had a nickname, El Bonbon de la redacción. What does that mean?
Oh my God! Don't tell me you found that on Google. It means It means like the candy. Like bonbon is a candy, like a
gumdrop.
Like a gumdrop, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I was like the gumdrop of the newsroom, and I was so cute and young, and it was truly a male-dominated environment. Add to that, which was probably like most newsrooms in the country, right? But when you add to that a very Latin culture, you know, I grew up in that newsroom in that way.
You know, that it hasn't always been the easiest environment for anybody. I mean, there was the paper's lobby was bombed in 78. I think that was before you got there.
Way before, yes.
Way before you got there. When you were a reporter for the paper, you worked with editor Manuel de Dios Unanue, who did a lot of reporting on the drug trade and was shot to death in 1992. How did that affect you?
Well, Manuel's death had a great impact on my life. He was actually my mentor. It was under him that I kind of grew up as a reporter. I was there in the whole kind of Manuel era where he kind of, his mission was to restore the credibility of the paper. And his passion was the civic, what we know now to be civic journalism. But at the time, it was just what he did from his gut, which was about being an advocate for the people who he was serving. And El Diario has always had this mission, right? We call ourselves El Campeón de los Hispanos. And for me, it's
the champion.
Which means the champion of Hispanics. And you can't do that without championing a cause, right? So we would publish in the paper, readers would tell us where there were drugs being sold, and we would publish the name of the corner, right? We were like the voice where people were afraid to call the police department. We were saying to the police commissioner in the paper, drugs are being sold here. We want action.
Has anybody ever been called to account or brought to justice for killing him?
Oh, yes.
But did his death ever make you fearful or question what you were doing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when he was killed, I was no longer at the paper. I had not, neither was he, by the way. But when he was killed, my son was about 4 months old. So now I was a mom. And I felt that maybe I couldn't do journalism in the way that Manuel did it. Maybe I wasn't cut out for that. Like, my most dangerous assignment was covering the South Bronx, and I was never scared. And so by November of the year that Manuel was killed, I left. I was at Channel 11 at the time, actually. I was working in television. And I left. I went to work in government. Mm-hmm. And I never intended to go back to media.
So why did you?
Because El Diario called. I said no about the first three times because I had children. And I remember it took about 2 years to really clarify who killed Manuel and, you know, to bring someone to justice and all of that. And a lot of activism around the issue. There were a lot of journalists covering his death in New York who started to do stories about his character, whether he owed people money. And I was so upset about that because for me, the main issue was that a journalist had been killed. Manuel may have been the SOB that people make him out to be, but all he ever did was write.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, I'm Michelle Martin, and I'm speaking with Rosana Rosado. She is the publisher and CEO of El Diario La Prensa. She's the first woman to serve in that role. You mentioned something earlier I wanted to go back to. You said that the kind of advocacy work, investigative work that El Diario La Prensa was doing at the time, some people, you said, kind of looked down on it. Do you think that that is still true? Because, you know, there's always this sort of tension, particularly in ethnic media. A lot of people think that ethnic media is by definition sort of advocacy oriented because a lot of times they see as their mission to kind of counteract the images of the rest of the media.
And I agree that it is. And I think that's what's wonderful about it. I don't think that makes it less journalistic. In fact, I would argue that the big guys are trying to find that in order to survive, because newspapers have to be visceral. They have to be, you know, they have to stand for something. They have to give people a voice. And I mean, we're lucky enough, you know, I think we're lucky that we have this target audience that at the end of the worst day at El Diario, the worst day being the day when everything falls through the cracks and life is hard, you know that we produce a product that's in the hands of this consumer who's not just a consumer and who's not disconnected from us. You know, we have a 98% Latino staff, and at the end of the day, we serve our people. Like, I have a senior staff made up of second and third generation professionals who could work anywhere in mainstream. But they're at El Diario because there's a strong sense of legacy, you know, to our community. How special is that?
but you know, there are those who argue that the sort of general audience media, some people are concerned that too much of journalism is going in the direction of advocacy. And there are those who do feel that ethnic journalists too often are perceived as advocates because they take a side in a policy argument and their objectivity then becomes questioned, like, for example, in immigration. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, that's different. I'm saying, you know, there's a difference between what we do in journalism that is about also resolving, not just covering dispassionately, and what's going on in immigration, which is people really carrying out an agenda which is an agenda of hate and ignorance. But pretty much, I mean, the paper being an advocate on the editorial pages doesn't mean that reporters are out there on a mission.
I have to ask you about the beauty queens. I have to.
What?
Because you're the only paper, the only big city paper to sponsor your own beauty queens. Do you still do that? This was a famous issue, and apparently at the beginning you were against it. You thought this was ridiculous, and then you got on board with it.
It's so popular. Actually, we haven't done it for a couple of years now, where our marketing department's
My hopes
changed,
are dashed, but, by the way.
But no,
I don't know that I would qualify, but my hopes are dashed.
But it's about, you know, each community. In New York, we're like the parade capital of the country, right? So so we have all the groups have their parade, and they have their queens. And so we had the queens from the Puerto Rican parade, Dominican parade, Ecuadorian parade, kind of competing to be El Diario's Reina, right? And El Diario's Reina got scholarships. She got to be at El Diario events. She got to kind of be a spokesperson. But these girls were awesome. In fact, in another one of those wonderful ironies that, you know, you live in El Diario, one of the girls, our Colombian queen, wound up being she and her mom were hawkers by night of our newspapers.
Oh, wow.
In Queens. And then she went to college. It was interesting. Her brother was in college, and as soon as he graduated, then it was her turn. I mean, this is like, you know, the immigrant stories.
I'm so curious about your take on this issue. This whole question about language, especially as a person who grew up speaking English. You've always been bilingual, but English was your primary language, and then switched into being Spanish primary for professional reasons. The immigration issue seems to have kind of tamped down, you know, for now because of other issues. But what is your take on the future of Spanish as a language in the United States? You remember sort of earlier in the year, there was all this discussion about whether Spanish language immigrants are actually assimilating as quickly as other groups have in the past. And then you remember there was a Spanish language primary debate sponsored by Univision and the University mm-hmm. of Florida, and some of the Republican candidates refused to participate, saying they didn't even think it was appropriate to have such a debate, although it was later held. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, it's so silly. First of all, this is the only country where people fight against, you know, bilingualism or multilingualism, right? Every other country in the world encourages their children to speak two or three languages. So that's silly. And the fact that we have such an overwhelming, you know, number of Latinos in this country and growing, and it's the segment that's growing, and it happens to be the group that has retained, that, you know, that has had the most retention of the language. And that has to do with a lot of issues. It has to do with the proximity of the countries we came from. You know, I love when people, I get into this debates all the time in New York. I love when people say, well, my grandparents came here. Yeah, well, when your grandparents came here, it was hostile. There's no need for it to be that hostile today. And the fact that we have, you know, a lot of travel between the countries. I mean, the case of the Puerto Ricans is a great example. We're Americans. We're American citizens. All we do is fly back, you know, and forth from the island. Why should we lose our language in the process?
Well, people argue it's divisive, that it interferes with sort of national cohesion.
Yeah, but they only argue about that when it's Spanish. People never argue that point with Chinese. They never argue that point with other languages. It just really bothers them to hear people speak Spanish.
Well, no, there are those who argue that. That's a whole other conversation, as you know. That's another show. But that is. But the reason I'm curious about it is that, do you always feel that? I mean, it is the fact that El Diario La Prensa as a combined sort of entity has survived since 1913. But do you feel that there will be another 95 years in the offing, given that's not true, that Latino immigrants don't assimilate, because they do assimilate, they do learn the language. Is there always going to be a need for a Spanish language newspaper?
Well, you know, people have Spanish language preferences. That doesn't mean they're not bilingual. That doesn't mean they don't function in an English-speaking world.
I take your point that you are not an elder, but you are a senior diva. So in that vein, do you have any wisdom to share?
We get overwhelmed by what I call the tyranny of the urgent. When I learned that somewhere along the way, that things are urgent on a day-to-day basis. We pay so much attention to what's urgent and what's troubleshooting right now, and we kind of ignore what's important. And so I strive every day to figure out how to dedicate some time to what's really important. And some of that is planning, and some of that is really listening to someone and maybe putting the berry down and just really engaging with someone who needs our attention, or someone whose attention we need. We need to stop. We need to pause. And we really need to reflect on what we want to do. And especially if you're lucky enough to be in a role where you can actually kind of impact thoughts, you know, impact policy, impact groups of people.
Well, we'll pause there and think about what you just said. Rosana Rosado is the publisher and CEO of El Diario La Prensa. She's the first woman to serve in that role, and she was previously the first woman editor-in-chief. And she was kind enough to join us from our New York bureau. Thank you for slowing down long enough to talk to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.